Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPod and MP3 player. Hello and welcome to The Drill Down, the podcast where we take a look at some of the week's most important events in tech and on the web and how they affect us all. I'm Andy Sarcini.
I'm Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Dwayne DeFreitas.
I'm Chris Bernor.
And I'm Lydia Davis.
Wow, we have more than a full house today. We got everybody plus Lydia. This is like one of my favorite weeks of the month when Lydia gets to join us and we get like an extra dose of tech experience to add to our sounding board here. So, On this week's show, Google wants to put Google Play in every living room and on your mobile devices, and they built a tablet to do just that. Facebook changes your email, Microsoft buys a Facebook clone, Zynga wants you to play with your friends, and more Apple news than you can shake a branch at. But first, we occasionally like to do a segment on the show we call What We're Playing With, where we talk about the gadgets, apps, and tech that has obsessed us over the last week. And what I want to talk about is I went to go see Brave this week, last weekend, which isn't a tech phenomenon in and of itself, but the theater that I saw it in was one of only 14 theaters in the country that are testing a new technology by Dolby called Dolby Atmos.
Nice, nice.
And essentially what Dolby Atmos is it's essentially 64 speaker surround.
Yeah.
So they've got...
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
With speakers on the ceiling.
Yes.
Now, like, things are getting crazy.
Well, I mean, where else would you put them at 64?
So there's more, like, defined areas all around you. But yeah, right behind you. And I can't wait to hear the ceiling speakers. I'm actually going to be at Dolby HQ tomorrow.
Oh, are you really?
Demo.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So tell us, Andy.
Yes.
I just want to say, this will compel me to go to theaters far more than 3D ever could.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, from my experience in the... I saw it at the Burbank AMC 16, and they have a special theater there called the ETX Theater, and that's AMC's branding for... It's essentially whatever the state-of-the-art technology in theatrical exhibition is, they install it first in those ETX theaters. And it's a little bit of a premium, but it's worth it if you're seeing the... It can be worth it, I should say, if you're seeing the state of the art. So it's not just 64. It's up to 64 speakers surround. And it isn't the fact that there's 64 speakers. What really defines the Dolby Atmos specification is that they can really discreetly pinpoint where the sound... lands. Like, the sound can be right next to you or right next to somebody a few rows up. It's more about being able to discreetly position the sound.
So, and does that mean the sound is different for every person in the theater? Like, when
it depends
sit next to,
on the mix.
You know, if it's like 10 of us at the movie there, like if, you know, Devin's on one end and I on the other, the experience is, I know, it's kind of, it's not that subtle though now. So, if they're, I mean, it's very subtle though now. I'm saying if they're making it so that the sound is going to drop on the third row from the middle banner part up and to the left.
Yes.
That means it's just a very different experience.
They
for
can.
Yeah.
Yeah. The movies have to be mixed specifically for Dolby Atmos, and Brave was for this theater. And the caveat that I had, the one drawback that I had to this particular screening is that it was so loud overall that it was difficult to really enjoy the discrete positioning. But I did definitely notice it in places. Like, there's one point in Brave where it's raining, and it really did feel like rain was coming from right on top of you. In the opening where they have the Disney logo, there's a point where Tinkerbell flies over the castle, which creates like that arc over the Disney logo castle. Yeah. And you can hear that, her flying right overhead, things that I've never noticed before. But overall, it's just a fuller sound, I feel.
Mm-hmm. How was the preview movie, the one with the stars and the ladder and all that stuff?
Beautiful. Yeah, that was more of a case where you could really pinpoint discrete. And also there was a tech trailer, a short tech trailer before the Pixar, before the movie called Leaf, that Pixar created specifically for as a Dolby Atmos bumper. And that kind of showed off the technology as well, where you're going through this forest following a leaf, and you could hear the branches overhead kind of crackling as you're moving through the forest. So I think overall, I think that like Devendra, I think your experience will probably be better because they won't blow your ears out with in the theater. But I think it's one of those things where you're definitely going to, from what I understand, Devendra, you're probably going to get some discrete, made for Dolby Atmos.
And they're probably going to show some clips from Brave too.
Uh-huh.
It's just really funny because I saw Brave on a typical, typical 3D theater, and I didn't even think the sound design was all that impressive. So yeah, just funny that it's like the premiere. Atmos film at this point. And it's also funny, it's like the other really great thing about Brave is the great hair technology.
Oh my god.
Brand new software to render that hair.
That's probably the best thing about
the hair in Brave was amazing.
Yeah. Too bad.
Well, it was more than the woman's hair. Like when I found when I saw Brave was that the entire movie seemed almost as if it was live action except for the faces of the humans. Like the bears, I could almost not tell that they were like cartoonish. They weren't cartoonish at all. Like they fit in, sure. They had to work to make them cartoonish. The grass, the leaves, the trees, the rustling, the wind, all that stuff.
It's a different take for Pixar because usually they push things to be a little bit more caricature.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's a different. It's a radical take away from the Rapunzel movie Tangled, because you're the typical Pixar things say, okay, we don't want Uncanny Valley, so we're going to make stylized stuff, the character stuff you're talking about.
I have to say, I agree with you there, because I noticed that there were a couple of scenes in Brave where there were no characters, and it was just kind of landscape, and those scenes look like they could have been could have been landscape shots from any other live action movie that took place in the Scottish Highlands.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's amazing, because when you look at the when you look at what's going on with like Tangled, they turned the software to work for the traditional movie look and feel, and that was really expensive for them. Now they've got the new software and they're turning it to look super real, but they're aware, they're really hyper aware of the uncanny valley. So the faces of the humans still make you feel at ease with the caricatureness, but the landscape is real enough to really suck you in. So regardless of how you like the story or didn't like the story or whatever, I felt compelled. I was excited watching it just because I felt like I was there. I felt like I was really, and this was 2D. This wasn't any fancy 3D stuff. This was right there for me, at least.
Devendra, I'm excited to hear what your impressions of Dolby Atmos will be when you see it.
Yeah. Just like you were saying, Dwayne, like, I think this is the sort of thing that will get people into theaters. And also, like, most people don't even have typical surround sound in their home, so I like the evolution of this theater tech and things like more movies relying on IMAX too. That's all good stuff for theaters.
Anybody else have anything that they're playing with? Well, let's move on into our headlines then.
I always go to GDGT to see if I've put anything up during the last week, and I'm looking at it now, and I'm like, I have way too much shit on GDGT. I need to redo my renter's insurance.
I need to fill that stuff out because I haven't done that at all, really, except for my projector. I think my projector's up there. Okay, so just 1 month after Amazon Studios was calling for original comedy and children's series projects, they announced that they've selected their first four projects, choosing three comedies and one children's show. They've become the first submitted scripts to be selected for Amazon Studio Series development slate. 9,000 movie scripts and 1,000 series pilots were submitted. Amazon says that there are currently 16 film projects underway, but they've focused on four initial TV projects, which are The 100 Deaths of Mort Grimley, Magic Monkey Billionaire, Doomsday, and Buck Plaid Sheep. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll discover what these shows are like when they come out, but they couldn't be any better or worse than Welcome to Lilyhammer.
They couldn't be better or worse?
I mean, they
couldn't be any worse, he said, than Lilyhammer.
Oh, okay.
They probably could be. Yeah.
I don't know. User-generated content can get real ugly.
Well, hopefully and Amazon doesn't have a great deal of experience in user-generated content, with the exception of reviews. Like, yeah.
But you know what they do have is experience with crowdsourcing the content curation, which hopefully they'll apply towards their content projects here. Okay, so let's move on here. Why in the heck would Microsoft pay $1.2 billion to buy a Facebook knockoff for businesses? No one put it precisely in those terms, but that was the subtext of a conference call that concluded this week as Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer and other executives answered questions about their deal to acquire Yammer. Ballmer said that he sees the value not just in Yammer's products, technologies, employees, and customers, but in its viral adoption model, in which individuals and groups can start using the product initially on their own, in many cases leading their corporate or IT departments to sign up for premium tools. It's a trend that's commonly known as the consumerization of IT, as individual users drive broader corporate tech decisions. Ballmer said that his company's plans are to learn from those marketing techniques as it sells existing products for businesses, including Microsoft Office and Dynamics.
This is a model acquisition, guys. This is not a. I mean, like Yammer. We tried Yammer out where I work, and there's some advantage. Like the idea that typically people see a link and they send it to the entire company. In my case, 50 people, so it's not like going out to thousands of people, but is okay. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to go back and check my email for the interesting emails that were there. But if there's a feed I can look at that's focused on my professional, world, if there's a feed that I can like take a look at, oh, that looks interesting. Oh, this looks interesting. Oh, the way it's been packaged looks interesting. You know, that's a bit more exciting to me. So Yammer does have that kind of consumers have used it, but the fact that it works in corporate on someone's intranet or whatever is helpful. That's really there. But it's kind of a clunky product. And by that, I mean, you open it up in its own program, so it's not lost in some tab you have hidden somewhere. But it's not really something that I go back to throughout the day or even later. And in the end, that stuff ends up in a browser. The content ends up in a tab or a browser or whatever because I clicked on some link. And that thing is lucky if it gets to Instapaper. It's certainly not going to be read during the day. So
well, let's also be clear here, though, Dwayne. You are a crazy person when it comes to
and ad hominem attack.
Let's roll that out. She has 30 tabs open at a time as well.
Yeah. But Dwayne, you have hundreds. So let's not just let's.
I'm with Dwayne in the hundreds.
it gets to be crazy. We use Yammer AdventureBeat. It's nice. The big problem, and it is actually really useful to have like a platform to collaborate on and communicate, especially when we're like wrangling something like Google I/O. Everybody needs to look at the same thing, so we can all stay on the page. The problem is Yammer's technology and their infrastructure is pretty crappy. So it goes down all the time. It's kind of inefficient. It's sometimes you may not see the updates you need to. So that's the thing. People hate it, but they also can't find anything better. lots of sites have complained about it, so it's just it's one of those
really
things.
Good feat.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Microsoft bought them, is because there isn't anything too much better yet, and they are growing in a weird viral way. But I don't know if this is going to end up being like the Skype acquisition, which was Microsoft's biggest acquisition ever, and they did absolutely nothing with Skype. It's not even being fully integrated into Windows Phone 8. So I don't know what's going on with Microsoft in these deals.
Right. So just to be back on what Dwayne just said, I think the thing about Yammer is that email is a problem when you're trying to get everybody coordinated in one thing. You can't like email chains break into trees. The tree breaks into like a million galaxies of different email messages going back and forth. And it's not helpful. A chat room doesn't help either. The Yammer thing allows you to kind of like, I'm posting this. I can comment on it. I'm posting it. It's going to keep on going and it's really good. Because they're the only ones that do this, people love them. But the big problem for us with Yammer, and the reason why we got rid of it in the end, was because you couldn't integrate it into your systems. It remains an infrastructure based outside. It's not like Jira or anything, maybe like Etsycillion or whatever it's called. It's not like Confluence, where you can get the code, bring it in-house, and make use of it in your own systems and fully integrate it into what you do. You have to rely on their infrastructure, which has some security issues, in addition to the fact that it's just not – you can't rely on it. It's external. So it's one of those things. If your big pipe onto the outside goes down, you still can't talk inside with it like you could on any kind of internet you have. So that was one of the big issues with Yammer. If Facebook released a Google Apps type product, so you can have a Facebook like portal within your office, Yammer would die very quickly.
Huh. Or LinkedIn, honestly, could be in a position to do something like that too.
Yeah,
although people don't check it as often.
They're professional focused. So if LinkedIn, I mean, the big winner in this whole entire space is Jive, right? Jive does this the best, and Microsoft, for whatever reason, they want to choose Jive. They went after Yammer. Yammer does have some features that are good, but Jive is really focused on like bring us in house, have your corporate structure like using Jive to like share and send and all the rest of it, and it really does work. So I feel like Yammer, you know, it's sort of like how Facebook bought Gowalla and not Foursquare. You know what I mean?
Right. All right.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I really think that there is a use for something like this. I mean, the need to have a social network specifically focused on, you know, your workplace, especially once it gets over a certain size, would certainly be useful. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard anything that suggests that Yammer is anything other than the Friendster of that space.
That's one of the reasons I selected this story, because I thought it was unusual that they bought that. And then hearing that article that pointed out that it was the marketing model essentially that was the reason that they bought that for, I thought was an interesting take on that analysis. At Zynga's second annual Unleashed event in San Francisco yesterday, Zynga unveiled a unified platform to bring players together across portals such as the web, Android and iOS, Facebook and Google+. The idea is centered around the Zynga Message Center, the hub found on Facebook and Zynga.com that contains a player's friends list, an activity feed of their gaming statuses and gaming suggestions. Also, with the newly launched Zynga API, third-party developers can beef up their game with widgets previously available only on Zynga.com. Players can also connect using the newly launched real-time multiplayer feature, which, just like it sounds, allows multiple players across separate devices to play with or against one another simultaneously, a far cry from the turn-based gaming that Zynga offers. What's unclear at this point, however, is how the new network will affect Zynga's relationship with Facebook, which has been, you know, fairly symbiotic. So who knows? We'll see. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, Facebook and Zynga just got together, and Facebook's ad platform that people have been talking about forever is now exclusively available on Zynga's website. So I feel like
they're continuing that symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, that relationship is I mean, Facebook doesn't have these ads on any other third parties except for Zynga right now. So I feel like Zynga is still there, but for a company that lost 90-something% of its profits previously, I feel like Zynga is looking to the future and saying, okay, knocking off Mattel and Hasbro games for online play isn't really working. We bought OMG Pop. No one's using it anymore, the draw something. And we have to find a way to get those other ideas in here. Get that API set up so that developers can come in with their ideas. Get 3D gaming if we can. Get whatever we can do and make multiplayer like a real thing. And we'll really get like our platform is going to be the key rather than like our wares. And I think that's generally like a slow approach to what the internet has become. It's platform vendors that make the money. The Twitters, the Facebooks, the iOS, you know, all that stuff. You know, Android. And I think Zynga has been slow to realize that they can become a gaming platform, you know, that really is powerful.
Yesterday feel underwhelming to anyone else, or was it just me?
Yesterday?
Zynga?
Yeah.
I mean, Zynga's been underwhelming to me for ever.
So many little bits of nothing came out of it. It felt like nothing substantial.
Unlike Google, which we'll be talking about in a minute.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I love that line, Devendra, that Dean wrote.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
In Just for Once, can Zynga publish a game that they didn't clone from another developer, which was the EA. Dean had that in his post, didn't he?
I think so. I mean, it's a common complaint too. It's these guys are unashamed to like just steal ideas from
they
other
are
people.
Artists, man.
But that was AI. That's all they are. Ripoff artists. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Chris has been like so not excited about anything Zynga's done for the last 2 years, because Zynga is a ripoff artist that's like able to get these, what's it called when it's like free? It's not quite in the public. It's like almost in the public domain. Game ideas, repackage them with a different copyright and just do it. This is kind of like gross.
Well, they rip off even their own games. I mean, look at all the stupid Ville games. Is there any difference between any of them?
That's
they
kinda...
had Farmville. I think that was like literally the only game that I actually considered. Well, okay, they had Words with Friends.
No, that's Scrabble.
They
that's
didn't make that one.
Scrabble's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. But yeah, that's kind of why I had a kind of a gleeful sense of Schadenfreude when EA announced that they were doing SimCity for social networks, because their marketing strategy with that is that we're the original, you know, whatever Ville, fill in the blank Ville. It's a very pointed campaign against Farmville or City, whatever Zynga's City game is, and I actually hope that they do well, because I'd like to break that Zynga monopoly on.
I don't know if I ever wish EA Activision well based on what they've done to the gaming industry, but that's a discussion.
I would wish them well against Zynga. If EA has been bad for the gaming industry, I don't even want to think about what would happen if Zynga achieved some level of market dominance like EA has. It would just be the end of entertainment.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our main topic. But before we do, I want to talk briefly about our sponsor, who is Audible.com. And for the listeners of the Drill Down podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. And the audiobook I'd like to talk about this week is called Imagine How Creativity Works by Jonah Lehrer. This is from the best-selling author of How We Decide. It's a sparkling and revelatory look at the new science of creativity, shattering the myth of muses, higher powers, or even creative types. Jonah Lehrer demonstrates that creativity is not a single gift possessed by the lucky few. It's a variety of distinct thought processes that we can all learn to use effectively. You'll learn about Bob Dylan's writing habits and the drug addictions of poets. You'll meet a Manhattan bartender who thinks like a chemist, an autistic server who invented an entirely new surfing move. You'll see why Elizabethan England experienced a creative explosion, and how Pixar's Office Space is designed to spark the next big leap in animation. So I see the little murmuring here and there in our Skype chat. You guys have take a deference to the Jonah Lehrer's works.
I mean, I have to say that I don't know. Maybe based on the way I've been educated, a lot of the stuff he says seems to be pretty, pretty pedestrian. Pretty not like he doesn't come to the kinds of conclusions. He comes to conclusions that my professors came to.
You know, it's interesting. That was some of the criticism of the book on Audible itself. It said that it's basically the kind of stuff that a lot of people in the technorati kind of generally know already, but it's a good round sort of introduction to those theories to someone who hasn't had that sort of introduction at all.
It's liberal arts. It's like, let me break down liberal arts like an R&B song in a book. Is that kind of how I feel about it? Like, to make you laugh because he knows what I mean. Like, in every R&B song, there's a part where they like break it down, right? You'll hear it in like the rap songs. Like, they'll be like, yeah, break it down. It's just like the chorus, right? The chorus over and over again. And I feel like this is a very, like, it's a lot of the points he hits on are classic liberal arts ideas.
Yes.
That he's trying to break down for the person who hasn't had that kind of education. Maybe
Right. That's the major criticism of this book from the people who've read it and posted critiques on Audible.
Lydia says, for Nuff Nuffs.
Right. I'm still not sure what that means. Is that like a muggle?
Kind of like a muggle. I've been avoiding muggles because the Ranger gets freaked out.
Yeah, it's been several episodes since you've mentioned muggles, Duran. I'm very proud of you.
Nuff-nuffs, the technological muggles, right?
In any case, you can download that free audiobook or any of Audible's other 100,000-plus trials. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. for the free audiobook of your choice and the 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. It's more important, I think, than the audiobook is the opportunity to try out the service. So there we go. We're going to take a little break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about how Google wants to put Google Play basically everywhere, from your living room to your tablet to basically everywhere you are going to be. So take a listen to this and come on back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Drill Down live on Geeks of Doom, the Roundtable podcast, where we take a look at the best in tech and social media and how it affects us. I'm here with Devinder Hardware, Duane DeFreitas, Christopher Bernor, and Lydia Davis. And let's talk about Google's I.O. conference today. So Google, during their I.O. conference in San Francisco, unveiled its own Nexus tablet, the Nexus 7, a 7-inch tablet running Android 4.1 Jelly Bean, which we'll talk about in a second. Will have a 1.3 gigahertz quad-core Tegra 3 processor, as well as a 1200 by 800 IPS display with a 178-degree viewing angle. The tablet, which Google says is built specifically for Google Play, and you'll see this theme running through Google's announcements today, will have a 1.2 megapixel camera, 1 gig of RAM, and a battery that'll get 8 hours of battery life during active use or 9 hours during video playback. The tablet will weigh 340 grams, just shy of 12 ounces, and just a millimeter thinner than the Kindle Fire. 8 gig and 16 gig configurations will be available. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and NFC all come standard, and there is no version of the tablet that can connect to a cell network.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The Nexus will hit the $199 price point, same price as the Kindle Fire. Buyers will receive $25 in credit in the Google Play Store for a limited time, and the device will ship in July. So having taken a look at this new tablet, what do you guys think?
I'm going to start off. I'm going to be slightly critical and kind of like happy at the same time. Amazon, hello, Jeff Bezos and Larry Page have like head-to-head battle to fight. Now, in terms of actual reality when it comes to how tablets are sold, I'm going to say that 8 hours on a 7-inch tablet is weird. I mean, it's weird because it's supposed to be like awesome and whatever. But if I can get 10 hours on my 9.7-inch tablet, that's just what I want. You know, like I want more hours, and my tablet has to be a little bit bigger for that. That's fine. I'm also a little upset that it has no cellular connectivity, because as someone who's been bitten by the LTE bug and 4G on my tablet and all that other stuff, I've turned off the cellular and I've been like, I'll just work with Wi-Fi. And to be honest, you just can't do it if you use your tablet as one of your main devices. And I don't know. I feel like I'm happy that it's new, the new Android, so it does have some flash support, I imagine. So you can get to Amazon, you can play some of your videos if you want to play off your Prime subscription. But, I feel like that's one of the things that's really going to attack Amazon. Amazon's obviously going to have an easier time, Amazon users, getting to that Amazon Prime subscription, content.
Right.
But if Google can get there, that's a big differentiator from, the iPad, which is still dominant.
Yeah.
So, here's a question.
I don't think the lack of cellular is that big of a deal, just because not too many Android tablet not too many people are buying tablets right now, and the fastest growing Android tablet is the Kindle Fire, which has none of that, right? It's kind of just its own thing. And the reason that's taken off is that Amazon took the crazy wild west of Android and built like a usable ecosystem that people could navigate on their tablets and not worry about all the crap around the Android market and everything. So I don't know. I'm even more negative than you, Duane, because I think over the past few years, I've realized that Google is completely clueless about tablets. They just don't know what to do. Initially, companies like Samsung just dumped Android on like 7-inch tablets for the original Galaxy Tab. It was terrible because it was never optimized for tablets. So maybe a year later, Google optimizes Android for tablets, but they were very expensive and nobody wanted to buy them. So we've got this weird situation where, and also there are no tablet apps for Android, not very many. And they're doing a crappy job of like convincing people to actually build them. So I don't know. It's like Google is attempting to recreate the success of Android on smartphones, but they never had a clear they barely had a clear vision for Android on smartphones. And that the whole way that's been built up has changed several times over the past few years. There's even less of a vision for Android on tablets. It's almost as if they assumed, hey, we'll make this software and it'll be wildly successful. I don't think that's happening.
I agree with everything you're saying, and which is why I'm sort of like, I look at this tablet and I get that it's trying to attack Amazon on some levels, but for the money, I feel like I'd still, except for the form factor, which is pretty, I still prefer the Amazon tablet over this tablet if we had to buy it today.
Yeah, that I don't know about. Like, it is a much faster. The thing about the Kindle Fire is that it's a pretty crappy piece of hardware. It's slow. The display is bad.
I completely agree with all that those things. But I just feel like getting to the content I want, or to the average nuff muggle, non hardcore user, whatever, getting to that content is easy. And until I see the interface of this thing and how it's so well designed with Google Play, I'm going to have to kind of take a pat. I'm going to have to say that Amazon still holds the cake. And Amazon is releasing the new hardware.
Lucky for you, an updated Amazon Kindle Fire will be coming next month.
Exactly.
Or so.
That's right.
Yeah, just wait for that. Do not buy the old Kindle Fire now.
I'm not buying a Kindle. I'm fine with this iPad.
I'm telling everybody listening, our listeners, you know, if there's one lesson you take away from this episode, do not buy a Kindle Fire in the next month because you will really regret it. I don't know. Like, my biggest problem with this is it just seems so sad, guys, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just kind of pathetic. Like, this is Nexus tablet. This is the thing that...
Nexus is the brand.
Nexus is the, like, high-end, the creme de la creme of Android, and it's a crappy $200 tablet. Because, like, clearly Google has just given up on the high-end of Android tablets. Clearly, you can't compete against the iPad. So what are you going to do? Compete against the one company that's managed to have a semi-successful Android tablet. It's truly, truly pathetic.
Well, you know what? The takeaway that I got even from this entire I.O. conference is, and I may be stating the obvious, but they're not interested in trying to be the cutting edge of technology. They're trying to exploit their shopping portal, essentially. I mean, this is, they want some of Amazon's pie as far as being a content delivery device. So this is a content delivery device first and foremost.
Exactly.
I was going to bring that up when we talked about the Q.
That's why I think that the idea of the new Kindle is really going to it's really like they're trying to attack that, but it's not really going to. What?
Right.
Say again?
That's content you want. You want stuff that may be on Amazon streaming or
your
Amazon Music library. I don't. How many people are saying, "Man, I can't wait till this movie hits Google Play, like I can play it on all my Android devices."
I know. Do you have like Google Play? Does it have a straight up like you can see? Like, there's no option to pay a yearly fee and see a whole bunch of content. I feel like you have to still rent it or buy it one movie at a time, like you would via Apple.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, it is a direct iTunes like competitor
right? Yeah. Thing. So. That's why I think the Amazon strategy is just so much, regardless of the hardware, the Amazon strategy is just so much more compelling to the user.
Well, it's simpler, and that's really all you have to be. You have to be simpler, and you have to give people a few choice things that they would want to do on the tablet. So that's what the Kindle Fire did, and at $200 when it was released last winter, that was a damn good steal. When they lower, when they release a newer device at that same price point, it's going to sell like crazy, too. The real question will be, who goes for the Nexus 7 versus the new Kindle? I still think general people will go for the Kindle. Maybe the geeks will go for the Nexus 7.
Yeah.
I think they will be kind of unhappy with it when they realize there's not much you can do with it.
The Nexus 7
it's got a little bit more processor power than it.
It has a ton more.
Yeah, it's a ton more. It's quad core. It has more processing power than the iPad, theoretically.
Yeah.
Depends on the chip. But you know what? It's this is the thing that everyone's trying to build up for Google I/O today. And I think it was just kind of a sad disappointment. Hmm. And you know what? You look at the Microsoft Surface from last week. That thing, truly innovative, truly trying to break new ground. And what's, I guess, really sad for Google is that this thing makes the Surface seem so much more interesting.
Yeah, I remember we were talking last week, Google's going to come up with their awesome thing. Like, this looks pathetic, actually.
Yeah. It's like, hey, really looked... let me ask you a quick question here. Do you think that it was wise of Microsoft to trump Google in getting their announcement in advance, even if they were announcing something that was so completely unready?
That is so bittersweet. It's so weird. On the one hand, we can talk about the Google tablet, the Nexus 7, with respect to the Surface and what we know of it. But we also know that you can't actually touch a Surface, play with a Surface, know what a Surface costs, know if it has cellular. You don't know so much about it. So it has this kind of...
It's less real than the Nexus.
It's less real, but it has a glowing mystique about it because you feel like Microsoft can't not release it. But then again, I feel like I'm getting some... My gut is giving me this like BlackBerry Playbook feeling of... I'm going to show you some shit and not let you touch it. And then when it comes out, you're going to be disappointed. My bad.
Well, the difference is there that RIM was a terrible company that could never have fulfilled those promises. And I think Microsoft has at least proven they can ship a product. You know, like they can ship something like that.
Yeah.
It'll get better, even if it's not perfect initially. To what you were saying, Andy, like I think Microsoft is operating out of fear. Like so many things they do now, they are just freaking terrified of what's going to happen. Like I think they bought Skype for what, $8 billion, because they knew something crazy was going to happen with video chat, and they didn't want Skype to get like even bigger and more expensive. They kind of wanted to get their own handle into that. And the same thing with like this whole the Windows Phone 8 switch to the Windows 8 like kernel,
right?
All that, it's like, oh well, let's just unify our kernel, let's just make software easier to do, even though it screws over the developers. So anyway, that Microsoft operating out of fear, I think that actually worked out well for them last week.
I mean, to some extent, that's how larger organizations operate. They're operating under, you know, they have their position, they're trying to figure out what to do next. And they can't.
Some of them just pretend that nothing's happening. That's bad, and they just like end up falling by the wayside, like RIM.
Yeah.
You know, or like the way Microsoft was before today. Mm-hmm. Remember when the iPhone came out? No one will ever go for it. All that crap. Windows Phone is the best thing around, or you know, whatever it was. So I feel like they're reacting to something that happened a long time ago, sort of like the Doppler effect in light and in sound, rather. Like they're like, oh shit, those waves. We just got that information. We got to react to it now. And on some level, they're Microsoft, so they can move that ship. They can.
Yeah, they're not moving at light speed, or right.
They're not moving at light speed, but
drive or something.
At least they're trying to say, okay, we want a single kernel, or at least two kernels instead of one kernel, or whatever.
Timelines sync up, we can wage war.
Exactly. They're gonna like they're basically a big like Spanish galleon during the Golden Age of Sail.
What's going on here?
Right, and they're turning it so they can get their broadside ready. Unfortunately, Captain Nemo is shooting torpedoes at them from his Apple submarine. His submarine is shooting torpedoes at them, and they can't even think about it. So that's what's happening.
By the way, speaking of how disappointing the Nexus 7 was for me, did you guys see the crazy Google Glass, Project Glass demo that they did?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Let's talk...
That wasn't in the show notes, but I just kind of want to say, wow, that is the demo to end all freaking demos.
So essentially, what was that? Sergey Brin leaping from a plane wearing the Google Glass?
No, it wasn't Sergey Brin. That would have been even more amazing. No, Sergey Brin came onto stage.
Jumping out would have been...
Either of them doing it would have been amazing, because they were on the stage like 30 seconds before. But he was doing like a Kanye thing, right, where he interrupted Vic Gundotra. He's like, wait, I got something to show you. And it's a live demo of, like, a group of people skydiving from like above the Moscone Center, using Google Plus Hangouts and the Google Glass, and streaming it all the way down, all the way down. Then they land on the roof. Then some guy, like, somebody puts on the glasses, and then they ride, like, they do a jump over a side of the roof or something,
uh-huh.
and then they rappel down, and then they ride into the auditorium, all live, all streaming via Google Plus Hangouts using the Project
How big were the glasses? I wasn't able to see this at work. Well, how big were the glasses?
Everyone's saying they're super light. A few people, Sergey Brin let a few people touch and like put on their Project Glass things, and they're saying they're incredibly light, and they were even able to wear them like over their current glasses. So,
I mean, they've got to make them. I guess it's developer ready, not like consumer ready.
Yeah. So,
they're like $1,500 at this point.
Yeah,
developer ready. Like, yeah, you're going to pay
$1,500 doesn't sound like a bad. I mean, it's not a bad price for what you're getting if they are what they say they are.
But they're not going to ship until next year.
Developers only, and it's. Yeah. US only, mm-hmm. and it'll be a lot cheaper when it goes to consumers.
That's correct.
So it seems almost arse about to me. Wouldn't you want as many developers to have it in their hands and to play with it and to, you know, provide that feedback to Google? It just seems arse about that you charge so much.
This is why I hate those stupid videos. If they had done this, if they had just waited until today mm-hmm. and done this, the world would be a different place. If they had give me out. If they had just not, they have not had this video that was all like, oh, this is what's going to happen. This is what it's going to do. It's like the Microsoft card thing, whatever. And they had just been like, we're going to surprise you. And they're going to keep wraps on it and surprise the hell out of us. So that when we're looking, we're like, what the hell's going on? We have a little bit of confusion, a little bit of like anxiousness, whatever. They jump out of the plane the way I'm looking at them now. And they come in and like, this is Google Glass. This is like the next evolution of like mobile. We would be shocked in a way that even the people who saw this live today
would have been interesting. It's hard to conceive of that world. But the big thing is that yes, the Project Glass stuff is expensive. I think they want as many people as possible to get them. But the problem is this expense. I mean, this is a company, by the way, that just gave out a Nexus 7 tablet, a Galaxy Nexus, and the stupid Nexus Q thing to everybody who just came to I/O today. So it's like it's not like they're being cheap. I think it is really really tough to build these
expensive.
Things. Right now.
I think I don't think that the price, the $1,500, is a high price for people on the severe cutting edge. This is new. This is Google's thing that is not a copy of anything else we've ever seen before, and that is tight. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just saying that I wish that they had, for the PR, from the PR perspective, from the advertising perspective, from the Google image perspective, they had, like, kept this under wraps until they could show us the hardware. Because people are like, that was really cool. I didn't think it would be there because the demo video was just so perfect and so what demo videos are. Let's think about Google Wallet a year and a half ago or a year and several months ago.
Right.
That it just didn't like have the impact that it really could have had. Our minds could have been blown. Like Apple could have not been in the news at all for a whole day.
Can I just ask who actually saw the video of them jumping out of the
lift? I just watched.
I haven't
it.
Seen it yet. I just
right. So well, I watched bits of it. I didn't. I saw parts of it, and then I saw a little bit more of it tonight. And I was thinking, you know, for all I know, he could have had a webcam stuck to his head. You know, do you know what I mean? There was nothing special as far as I was concerned.
Well, no, there were multiple. If you're looking at the actual video, there are multiple people in that in the hangout, and they're all mm-hmm. they all have different angles at the people like fall like.
Not the actual device. That's what she's saying.
Well, no, I mean you see, yes, in the video you see this guy land on the roof.
I understand that, but what you're missing, what I'm trying to say, is that. You remember when they first showed, you know, this is what it is months ago, and you could see them taking photos and playing music and getting it to respond to all these commands. You saw none of that today. All you saw was this footage.
Basically just a
camera.
That
could have been taken by a camera as far as I'm concerned.
Of course, seeing there's not enough interactivity.
But it was live. Well, wasn't it live?
It was live, but I wanted to see... You know, what can this thing do any more than anything else out there? And right now,
I've
seen it all.
This was their way of having a big showing, and
it was theater. It was
theater, and I think most of all, it was their way of saying, you know, Google has had this reputation in the past for. Announcing projects like the self-driving car, and then you don't see them ever again. But something like this with Google Glass, we're going to be shipping it. This is not vaporware. This is something that people are going to be able to buy next year, early next year. We want to make a big showing of that. Yeah. I think that was
Well, maybe they should have just spent that money and given it to the developers instead.
I see your point, Lydia. But I guess if you assume they're lying to you, then...
No, yeah. I don't assume they're lying to me. I'm fairly confident they used the glasses. What I'm saying is it didn't impress me as a wow. It didn't come across as a wow. It was just someone jumping off this blimp and landing on the Moscone.
And part of that's because
it's not that impressive. Another part of that
is video footage of that previously. You know.
And another part of that is the fact that
if there was some overlay, if they were chatting, if you could see some, you know, if there was something.
You're a tough crowd, Lydia.
Also, let's hop in here and just say one thing. If we had not seen the Google video that showed all this interactivity and the sharing and Google Plus and all other stuff like that, and we saw this and didn't know what it was, and saw them like land in the Moscone Center and walk in with these glasses on and let people touch them, if we saw all that, the impact would be a thousand times.
No, I get it, Dwayne.
No.
They showed us too much of how the finished product before showing us what this thing is as it is.
Well, let me just say, I saw it live, so I saw it as it was happening, and there was something, like, if you're just looking at it after the fact, and you're looking at just a couple clips, there is something to be said of seeing this whole freaking demo happen. Yes, but that's the point.
Why didn't they call their mother while they were doing it and show us that vision?
That's what I think the ultimate thing is.
I want them to do something other than just show me video footage.
There'll be plenty of time for that once the developers get their hands on it, trust me.
That's my beef.
I mean, at the same time, like you Devendra, Andrew, you're trusting Google, and that's great. I think that
I'm just saying, guys, some people just jumped out of an airplane.
Life is amazing. This is awesome. Why are you so upset about it? And I get that. I'm just saying that Lydia's approach, to me, highlights a certain like press that you know America's supposed to have that does a lot of questioning because it could be there's a couple goggles out there that have cameras built into them. It could be that this is just a question of you know Wi-Fi connected camera goggles doing that, right? As opposed or like you know cellular connected camera goggles as opposed to the Google Glass interactivity. There's a lack of interactivity that is a big honking sign of like, is this real?
Thank you. That's part
of the issue.
Well,
it's the interactivity they promised is not there even in this demo that we can't.
But at the very least, what they showed you is a pair of lightweight glasses with a camera on it that can broadcast the Wi-Fi.
I'm saying that alone is freaking impressive. We're not expecting a final product here.
And
like,
you of all people would have seen tiny cameras doing amazing things. So, you know, better than this, honestly.
I paid on a Kickstarter. I paid for a project that is essentially the same thing as Google Glass without the interactivity, and I still haven't seen it. So,
well, this is like a Kickstarter project, isn't it? Google saying, "Cough up $1,500, and we'll give them to you in a year or so."
If this thing is up to snuff, if this thing works as great as they've laid it out, it'll be one of the biggest moves in toward like full geek plus sport plus activity. Like, bring that connectivity, that interactivity, bring it outside of the office, the laptop, the you know, even mobile is still limited because it's part of this like little candy bar you have. If you can truly run with this and use this in these very active ways, then I think that we have a watershed moment in moving tech outside of the technosphere to people who want to really like create, use, and do all these things that we can't even conceive of right now with tech. If that's what this is, I hope that's what this is. But the demo from the video lacks a certain touch. But I do have hope because Google is a company that's changed the way we've lived in many, many ways. So if they can do this on this level, on this hardware focused level, that allow people to actually be completely active with their connected hardware, that's going to be something exciting.
All right. So at Google I.O., they also announced the next major upgrade to Android, which is 4.1 Jelly Bean. The Project Butter is the major new innovation focused on making the entire UI fast, fluid, and smooth. That includes triple buffering in the graphics pipeline. Google's I/O demo showed two Galaxy Nexus devices side by side, one running ice cream sandwich and the other jelly bean, with the latter offering a significantly higher frame rate while navigating the Android UI. They're also including something called Google Now, which is a sort of self-aware quality to Android phones, automatically updating you on your favorite sports teams in real time, learning your commute route and checking traffic, providing public transit information, like a personal assistant functionality, mixing in local location data for things like restaurants and trying to proactively anticipate things that you want to search before you search for it. Now I saw the video for Google Now, and I was actually more impressed with the Google Now idea than the faster UI. Like, I think that this is the kind of thing that everyone should be doing, and I'm glad that Google is able to kind of proactively to push this out there. And I'd love to see this. Like, I'd love to see Apple do something like this.
Well, I mean, it is basically, so Google Now is just one part of like all the new search updates in Jelly Bean, and the other ones are very much like Siri. Like, there's, you know, it's you can ask your phone questions and it'll ping you back with responses. Google Now is taking it a step further, and well, you can also like book restaurant reservations and things like that using Google Now, but it takes it all a step further because it like learns your habits, and that's pretty cool. I think that's
pretty very good step Google too, to learn your habits, to take that data and crunch it. I know you said that you want Apple to do this, or you'd like to see Apple do this, but I actually have to counter that, because I think that it's important to respect the fact that Google is doing this and they're innovating, and Apple isn't.
I agree.
Apple isn't innovating, but it's not that I want Apple to do this.
The reason I want Apple Google to do this is that I have an Apple. I have an iPhone. So
I know, I get it, but I want Google to do this, and I don't want Apple to do this, because I don't want Apple to become the copycat that other companies have become. I want Google to do this, and I want it to be so compelling that you leave your iPhone and move over to them.
Oh,
that's the kind of competition that I want to see in the tech sector. That's what I want to see. I want to see Google do something so innovative, so wonderful, so everything, that you're compelled for a single piece of functionality or multiple pieces of functionality to leave the ecosystem that you're currently comfortable in, because this stuff is supposed to get us out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's supposed to make us move around. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important to say, I don't want Apple. It's not important to say I want Apple to do it.
I agree with
you.
Ultimately, I agree with you, Dwayne.
Yeah, Andy, you definitely sound like the Apple fanboy. We know you sometimes turn
well,
into.
Well, it's just that I love – Apple is just so sexy in so many different ways.
Wow.
It's just hard for me to deny that, unfortunately, sometimes.
I have a nice big softy.
And I really don't consider myself a fanboy, but sometimes when it comes to stuff like that, like their design is second to none in my opinion.
Well, I'm also sure that Siri will eventually like get competitively upgraded to like do this sort of thing, but Dwayne's right. This sort of like massive innovation—that's kind of what you need. You need that competition, especially compared to Samsung's S Voice, which is terrible. It's kind of a joke and definitely a Siri ripoff. This is actually innovative. So glad it's happening.
So take the advice from Devinger from earlier before the show. You want a Windows laptop, you know, check out Samsung. You want, like, crazy, hardcore, random innovation stuff when it comes to, like, peripherals and whatever. Take a look at what Google's doing right here and right now. If you want just a straight mobile device that's going to get everything done but not have the most cutting-edge features, because let's face it, that's what iOS is. It's complete stability for a lack of cutting edge. Android dragged it and kicking and screaming to where it is today.
Well, also, more apps. Like a better app ecosystem. You're giving
better app ecosystem. Yeah. But in terms of just the OS being the driver for the innovation, there's that. So, I mean, like, you got to have a hodgepodge. To integrate yourself fully into one product maker is to limit yourself a lot, even though there's certain things that are simpler. So it's really.
Well, you could also easily trap yourself, too. So that's where it gets to be problematic.
Mm-hmm. So, 4.1 Jelly Bean will be distributed as an over-the-air update from mid-July to the Nexus, the Motorola Zoom, and the Nexus S, and, of course, the Nexus 7 tablet.
The Galaxy Nexus,
Also, Google announced that it's adding support for the purchase of movies as well as TV shows by episode or by season, and magazines on Google Play,
which nobody will do. Yep. Carry on.
Netflix just took over Apple as the number one home video you know, service in your house. And you know, given that Redbox is behind both Apple and Netflix, I feel like the Apple model of just like, yeah, I'm going to pay $15 for that, or like $4 for that, or whatever, it's fine when you think about it on its own. But even if Netflix doesn't have the newest, brandest, newest, amazing content, it's still much more easy to say, okay, what do they got? What are they suggesting? Yeah. I haven't seen whatever it is. I haven't seen like Torchwood or Doctor Who or whatever. There's a whole podcast about Doctor Who that Tom Sheridan is doing that's amazing. I haven't seen that stuff, so it's new to me. And that really is, I mean, it's not going to give you water cooler conversation necessarily, but, you know, I've gotten 4 or 5 coworkers onto Doctor Who, and now it is water cooler conversation. Because, you know, maybe it wasn't brand new because it came out in 2005, but no one here saw it unless they had BBC America and actually watched it.
Or were downloading it from the torrents. So I have to say that I've been dipping into Google Play a lot. What I like about Google Play that I've experienced is that on Google Music, Google can like seamlessly upload all of my audio content from iTunes into the Google Music library, and then I can play that literally on any other device anywhere else. Unlike Apple, which I can't, you know, I can't access my iTunes library.
That's a separate service from Google Play. Like Google Play is just like the store, but the whole Google Music thing, like that is a, you know, just like a,
it's iTunes Match, service. Really. It's just iTunes Match that you can run on anything you want.
Where you
can
actually upload everything
for free.
I hear you, Andy. That's actually a really useful feature. Like on my iPhone now, all my music comes through. Like my new stuff is on Spotify, and I save that to offline playlists. And for all my like random, you know, anime soundtracks and movie soundtracks, that's on Google Music, and I just use the little app to stream that when I need to, and it's great.
Yeah, right. I mean, I gotta say, like, Google. I mean, first of all, Google was the first one to drop the whole like buy it on the store online; it's gonna automatically download to your phone. We all, you know, we're ecstatic about it when we saw that kind of functionality in iOS 5
and Amazon with their Amazon's you know, storage locker service.
And there's something to be said about the fact that, like, the music I have that I upload to Amazon or to Google is exactly the same as I had it on my machine. Yeah. Whereas with my iTunes Max subscription, which is $25 a year, I put stuff up there, and I don't get what I put up there back. Hmm. Like, I get something else. I get the Apple guess about what it was that I put up there back. And for the most part, 80% of the time, it's fine. But for the other 20%, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to, like, turn off like iTunes Max on my iOS devices and just drag and drop my shit from iTunes because it's a little painful to hear what they guess the name of the music was that I put up there.
I have to say that with Google Play, I mean, it's clear that they started off as the Android market and they were Android-centric, and they still are as far as their apps go. But I really do see that the vision that they have for Play is to try and make it universal across
It feels like they're
platforms.
Taking on Amazon. I mean, that's really what this whole Google I.O. conference feels like. It feels like they said last year, oh, we're taking on Facebook, and then they've quietly gone and taken on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, at every single level of what Amazon does. Well,
I mean, that's where
the
money
the world is
doing. Really, follow the money.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no money going to Google Plus. I don't know if they just dropped that when Facebook didn't do so well, or if that was the plan all along or something. But like, it's
no,
kind
I think
of...
Google Plus is Google. I mean, everything I've heard from the people I know that work at Google and from what I've read about Google is that Google Plus is the initiative that they're moving toward. Everyone has to get on board. This is where Google's going to be. Google Plus is going to be the beast knees. It's going to be the shit. But in terms of straight revenue and a way to make revenue straight off of off of like content and ways to make revenue outside of search, Play is going to be the way to do that. And I think that we have to look at the business strategy. With Android, think about – people might have said Google hasn't made much money off of Android. But what they have made is an amazing new amount of subscribers. Anyone who ever got an Android phone had to get a Google account. Anyone who knew somebody with an Android phone who's sharing in certain ways had to get a Google account. So a lot of what I think we see is Google growing in terms of user base, and now Play allows them to take that user base and do stuff with it. And they're not moving as quickly as we'd like. And it's very amorphous, and I think they're still coagulating until they get to a nice good mound of gush that we could actually understand. But I think this is kind of where they're going. They're kind of attacking everyone at the same time in an effort to get anyone to notice that they're not just a search company.
Okay, so shall we talk about the Nexus Q?
Ah, the Nexus Q.
So Google unveiled the Nexus Q, which is a $300 black orb-shaped amplifier capable of wirelessly streaming music and playing video to connected devices with the specific locus situated inside the home. It's essentially a gateway to Google Play. The Q connects to users' Play Music accounts and streams track directly from the cloud to the device, which acts as an amp that connects to speakers inside the living room. It's comparable to Sonos in utility and function. It's powered by Android and controlled by your Android-powered smartphone and tablet devices. Directly from your devices, you can pick tracks in Google Play and add them to the playlist queue. Multiple users can add tracks from their separate music accounts to the same queue, creating what Google calls a party. Queues. Most striking qualities, however, have nothing to do with its utility. Completely distinct from the handsets and tablets it's worked on with partner companies, the Q is designed entirely in-house by members of the Android team. In essence, it's Google's first foray into becoming a proper hardware company. So what's your guys' take on this?
Yes, like, tell me in like non-marketing speak. Like, say I'm grandma. Like, why do I want this?
It's a ball.
And why does it look like a ball? Music to it.
Come on, guys. And it's $300. Who wouldn't want that?
Does it have an interface?
Oh yeah. Well, no. I've got a lot of it. Mainly, isn't this like a great reason, Google, to like put your engineers on a leash? Like, just hold it back.
Guys, that is the quote of the quarter. It is a great reason, Google, to put your engineers at least. 20% be damned.
The more I think about this device, like, the more it seems like representative of all the problems everybody's, you know, talked about with Google, and especially, like, that they can't really ship a consumer device. This is, you know, this device will never really take off. And I think, mainly because
I'm a geek and I don't even understand what it is. Like, I sort of think about it, but like I just can't ever imagine what would I want this for. What would I walk into Best Buy and be like, oh, that's what I want?
Exactly. And Google already has several platforms to take care of this. So instead of like spending maybe, you know, a year or a couple months to have like a killer sub $100, I don't know, Google TV streaming box or something, a platform it's actually been building up. This is a standalone product. This thing isn't even a platform. It's only going to work with like a couple of devices that Google will release to it or other Android 4 devices. This is all to fight AirPlay, by the way. This is a $300 ball to fight AirPlay. Ridiculous.
So ridiculous, because I mean, I got to say, the thing about AirPlay is that you don't have to think about AirPlay. And with this, I still don't know what it is. Like, I just don't know. I'm a tech guy. I'm a geek.
Apple TV, Dwayne, is very useful for doing other things like streaming Netflix and other content from iTunes. You know, it's a multi-purpose device. Now, if you strip all of that away and you pay $300 or three times as much and only do AirPlay, that would be a wonderful device, wouldn't it? Well, according to Google.
Exactly. I mean, I have a $40 Logitech Bluetooth adapter, the same size as my Apple TV, that sits on my speaker system because I had that before. And that seems to do what Google Play does.
Yeah. And I think the killer feature they're trying to push is like social streaming. So like you can build playlists with your friends. That is not anything special, guys. You can do that in a bunch of apps right now. And this thing is also Android based. So there's kind of no reason that this functionality couldn't have been built into like a Google TV box and something that actually would have made people use Google TV. Instead, they're splitting it off to this like separate product that no one will ever buy.
So it could have been a free app, but instead it's a $300 ball.
You know what this reminds me of is when Apple built their own speaker dock for the iPhone. You know, literally hundreds of other companies have made speakers for the iPhone, and Apple decides to come out with their own, you know, branded speaker dock that had less functionality than like any of the others, and even not even that great sound from what I read. So it's like, why? I don't understand what Google's motivation was for doing this when you could do this like with any other device practically.
I'm just unsure what was the thought process, right? Coming, like actually pitching this device, actually building this device. This is probably a multi-year project.
Yeah.
Kind of a joke.
How much are tickets to I.O.?
Expensive. It's
I mean, like, is it like $3,000, $10,000? How much? $1,600?
No, it's around $1,000.
It's around $1,000. So for $1,000, people got a $250 tablet, a $300 queue, and they got, and then they got what else? They got a third thing, right?
They got the option to buy a $1,500 pair of glasses.
The option.
The option.
Glorious.
Okay. So they so you got some, basically you're paying for your toys and you're spending $900 to go, plus your flight ticket.
Yeah. And people were very happy to get the free stuff as always, but it's like you are for paying for the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Glad that Google does this though, because it's
because lots of companies have those conferences, and you don't get a
WWDC. You spend $1,600 and you get nothing except for, but what you get is software help, which is a big deal. I'm not gonna lie. I don't know what Google does in terms of. I know I/O is a big thing.
Yeah, I mean there are developer sessions and stuff. It's pretty much set up just like I/O, or is it just like WWDC? Or were you guys satisfied with Android 4.1 Jelly Bean? It's apparently prettier. Like, they made a big deal about it has triple buffering, so now, like, the graphics are smoother, and VSync, too. It sounds like Google's building, like, an old 3D game. It's like, these are, like, the things I cared about with Quake 3 back in the day. Triple buffering! VSync!
Anisotropic filtering.
Yeah, anti-aliasing. Right. But no, this is your phone operating system, so I guess it looks pretty, but I don't think anybody cares. That's exactly the reason... Right. That people could buy iOS versus Android because they don't care about those things.
Do you feel like we're getting like smartphone bloat on a lot of these products? Like, I know people are always wanting bigger, faster, you know, stronger, but I mean, doesn't it feel like it's too much of a good thing?
Like, I don't know if it's always a good thing.
If it's done right, if it's done elegantly, it's not too much of a good thing. When it seems like, wait, why do I need that? Wait, what is that? What is that solving for? Wait, why is it like there's a big tumor on my technology of gunk and crap that I can never use? That's when it's overdone.
Because yeah. I'll be honest with you, I've got the iPhone on AT&T, and making a phone call is the least is the thing that my iPhone does the least well. I mean,
I gotta say, I have an iPhone on AT&T, and I have no problems with my phone call. Mm. But then again, I'm in Boulder, so
you're in a pretty low populated area. So
I mean, comparative to the big cities of the world, yes, I am.
And you also have like better, like just better overhead stuff for reception, so you don't have big buildings and stuff to worry about. I hear you, Andy. Like I have trouble with my iPhone too. Mm-hmm. What I like though is like the new crop of Android devices, the Galaxy S3, the HTC One series, those are actually really solid devices with big screens that don't feel big. And that's kind of a first for these giant phones that we've been seeing for the past few years.
And let's not forget what Apple did with the antenna in the iPhone 4. Like, let's over-design the antenna. And it even caused them to do this whole thing. Like, whether it was blown out of proportion or not, the fact is they did give away, like, these cases and everything. Because, like... it was over-designed. So over-design happens in a lot of places. I think there's often... not just Google. There's often or Google products made by Samsung and other people. There's a lot of there's a lot of people out there who want to differentiate themselves. And so they try in amazing ways. Like whether it's the iPhone antenna or the Apple MacBook Pro with Retina display and how it has different size fan blades to keep the noise down. Or, you know, Google's... you know, what we see from some of the Google products where they have, like, crazy large screens or, like, kickstands. I mean, kickstands, really? On their hardware. Like, it's we'll see that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the differentiating factor that's going to, you know, change the day.
All right. Let's move away from this and into our final word. We're going to take a short little break, play some music, and when we come back we're just gonna talk about a handful of Apple things and then get out of here for the evening. So take a listen to this and come on back. you're just joining us, you're listening to The Drill Down live on Geeks of Doom. I'm Andy Sarcini. I'm here with Devendra Hardwar, Dwayne DeFreitas, Christopher Bernor, and Lydia Davis. And let's talk a little bit about some Apple stuff. In a U.S. federal court this week, Judge Richard Posner ruled that the case of Apple versus Motorola will be dismissed in its entirety. The case in which Apple alleged Motorola was in violation of four of its patents and Motorola was left with one claim in return had been in litigation since 2010. In the end, Judge Posner seemed frustrated at Apple's inability to offer hard numbers. Both parties have deep pockets, he said, and neither has acknowledged that damages for the infringement of its patents could not be estimated with tolerable certainty. So all I can say personally is that I hope that this is a trend with patent litigation and more of these cases get dismissed, because I personally feel like patent litigation is bogging down technological innovation.
But don't speak too soon, Andy.
This is not over. This is,
well, I'm sure Apple's going to appeal.
Like, I mean, not, and I'm not saying like the whole war isn't over. This is obviously a battle in the war.
Right,
but this
right.
battle isn't even over yet, because there's plenty of space for each side to appeal this judge's stuff. Now, will that happen? I think the right of certiorari and everything is not going to go forth. I think the judge's plea will stand. But in terms of the amount of money spent on this nonsense, this is going to stick around for a while.
Really? I mean, I feel like this was primarily spent by I mean, wasn't this the suit that was basically initiated by Jobs because he was pissed off that Motorola had
destroyed
Exactly.
I mean, this was a vengeance lawsuit, not a business
This isn't the only thing that Jobs initiated. Remember, he started with the whole HTC suit and everything. I think that if Apple's leadership says whatever, leave it alone. Fine, but they're well within their rights to just say, okay, we want to try to appeal this. And given how much money Apple has and what Apple traditionally, I don't know how Cook thinks about this, but traditionally how they thought this was a threat to their business, it's not a lot of money to spend, even if it's $2, $3 million more in the court fees. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. What I don't want to see is this go to the Supreme Court and they make some really weird judgment from people who don't understand technology at all that affects all of us.
That's the real danger there. Yeah. We get some sort of broad-reaching ruling that affects all of us in our individual pocketbooks because of a lack of knowledge on the court's side. Mm-hmm. Apple has also won perhaps the most prominent victory in its multi-year battle over mobile patents by convincing a U.S. District Court judge to slap an injunction on sales of Samsung's Galaxy Tab 10.1 tablets in the U.S. pending further review of the patent claims between the two companies. The injunction is a huge victory for Apple, even though Samsung hasn't sold very many Galaxy Tab 10.1 units in the U.S. The ruling comes a week after the Motorola versus Google rule. I'm sorry, Apple versus Motorola ruling. So you win some, you lose some.
This is a bigger win than the other one was a loss. And the reason why this is a bigger win is because when this kind of stuff happens, it sets precedent. And precedent is the meritocracy of – precedent is the capitalism of the legal system. When common law says something and you can lean on that and say, this other judge said it, why wouldn't you? Judges tend to say, okay, well, we're all judges. We all know what's going on, and this means I have to do less work. So sure, whatever they said first. So the fact that they're able to put this injunction down means that it's not the end of the world, obviously, but it also means that they have something more. They have just that one more stepping stone to be on top of when they're wagging their finger at Android makers and what they believe they've done to steal their patents. They can probably go around to Asus and a whole bunch of other people making tablets and begin to say, hey, look what we got in the court already. You guys should really back down. And depending on the size of the company and what they're willing to spend on legal fees, you know the rest of the story.
Yeah. Earlier this month, it was reported that Apple would be launching a standalone podcast app in iOS 6. Instead of waiting, they posted the podcast app in the App Store Tuesday. The app supports streaming or downloading of episodes and offers syncing of episode playback between devices. That means users can, for example, start listening to a podcast on their iPhone and finish on the iPad. I loaded this on my iPad and iPhone and checked it out. I like it. I like the interface. There's one part of the interface that looks kind of like a classic radio dial where you can radio dial through categories of podcasts and see the most popular podcasts within those categories. Did you guys check this out?
Yeah, I'm having trouble getting it to work with my my podcast library on my actual my desktop on my Mac. That's my only big caveat with it. It's not talking to that. It's talking to the cloud, and that's great. But you know, I got a lot of stuff sitting on my drive that I want on here too.
I just don't trust podcasts, guys. Who cares? Really? Who cares?
They'll never take off. Nobody will ever listen to podcasts.
Indeed.
They have a special. I also want to say they have a special library. Not a library, but there's a special edition of the App Store, the iTunes Store, built into the application. Mm-hmm. So where normally you're in the music application, you want to say get more music or whatever, it'll flip the card and take you to the iTunes Store.
Right.
This one will basically just flip itself around, and you're still within the same app looking for podcasts. That is, to me, for whatever reason, I don't know, it's the same thing really, but it's a much more satisfactory way of adding to my podcast library than leaving the application and going back to it.
Hmm. All I know is that I was able to find the drill down in that by doing a search, so it works. You know
what the hell is the drill down?
So that part works as far as that goes.
I guess one thing about podcasts, the interesting thing is that you know potentially we could start charging for it.
Right.
You know, like it does kind of simplify the whole way to monetize podcasts, which I know a lot of shows have been dealing with. But I don't know how much that's going to take off. And it's kind of funny that Apple took so long to even realize this was something that needed to be done. You know, it's just so sad.
Yeah, it's strange to see Apple behind the curve on something like – on anything really, but on something like this in particular.
I don't know, guys. I feel like Apple isn't the – they're not about getting there first. They're about getting their best, you know?
Is this best?
I think that they're trying to figure out a way to do this better than other people have in the past. So
I think somebody looked around and said, oh, shit, what's this thing on iTunes with all this free content? Why don't we start to figure out a way to charge for this free content so we can make more money?
Well, for sure. I mean, you're right, Devendra. I did hear them mention that there were like buttons involved that you could potentially charge for the podcast. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up for the evening. Let's go around the table here, and I'll start with you, Devendra. Where can we find you online when you're not here on the Drill Down?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Devendra. I write about tech at venturebeat.com. I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. Everything else I do is at devendra.org.
Dwayne, how about yourself?
You can check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/DwayneD. You can also check me out on Google. It's gplus.to/DwayneD. And you can always check me what I'm doing at flavors.me. That's flavors.me/DwayneD, DWAYNED.
Chris, where can we find you online when you're not here on the show?
You can find me on Twitter at Chris Bernor, CHRISBURNOR. And then I blog at chrisbernor.com, and I curate a weekly list of startup-related articles and events at startupdigest.com.
Cool. And Lydia, how about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter, MadLead, and you can find me curating tech meme.
Yes.
Those days.
Love it. As for myself, you can find me at MrBabyMan.com, gplus.to/MrBabyMan. Oh, you know what? I rarely get the opportunity to plug something that I'm actually working on, but I wanted to plug, for the last year or so, I've been working on a cartoon for the Disney Channel called Gravity Falls, and it actually premieres this weekend on the Disney Channel. So,
what's the premise?
It's basically like, remember that show Eerie Indiana back in the 90s about the kid who moves to a town and there's all sorts of strange things that go on in
I
the town?
I love that show. I grew up watching that show. Yeah.
Okay, so imagine like that crossed with Twin Peaks and animated, and that's essentially Gravity Falls.
Cool.
And it's getting all sorts of good buzz. Also, I'm not just saying that, like, my touch point for whether something is getting good buzz or not, especially when it comes to mimetic things, is Tumblr. And if you do a Tumblr search for Gravity Falls, you'll see all the people are like doing all sorts of mashups and drawing their own characters and cosplay. It's really weird, considering we've only had one screening of that so far, of the show so far, and it hasn't had its official launch. So, Gravity Falls, Disney Channel, check it out. You can check out the past episodes of The Drill Down, as well as the other fine shows in the Geeks of Doom podcast network on geeksofdoom.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes by going to geeksofdoom.com, and we're in the upper right-hand corner of the site on the sidebar, and that's where our iTunes link is. Our show is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher Smart Radio for your phone. Find it in your app store at stitcher.com. We'll also have a link in our show notes. Facebook.com/TheDrillDown, Twitter.com/TheDrillDown. Sign up at j.mp/subus to get SMS alerts when The Drill Down goes live. If you get an idea for a story you think we should be talking about, tweet us or email us at comments@thedrilldown.com. A viewpoint on any of the stories we've talked about or any issue that pertains to technology, social media, or geek culture, send that story to submissions@thedrilldown.com for us to publish on the site. Let us help you reach the target tech-savvy market of influencers and outliers that is our wonderful Drill Down audience by writing to us at sales@thedrilldown.com for details. And be sure to catch us next time. That's it for this episode of The Drill Down. Thanks for joining us.